Bankless Nation, it is the fourth week of July, the final week of July. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Rollups. David, we got all-time high on the total crypto market cap. Do you know that? I just saw this while I was preparing the agenda.
Yeah. $4.001 trillion.
Yeah. That's great. For $4 trillion, it's incredible. Also, the Genius Bill was signed last Friday. The question is, what's next? I think this is a big, big, big deal. And what do you do if you're the White House, if you're Donald Trump? Well, first, you got to throw a party with all the stablecoin bros. And he did that. We have some clips from those shenanigans. Also, the big question, what's going to happen next after the Genius Bill? What next issuers are we going to see?
Yeah. What does this actually do? What does this unlock? How are the TradFi players going to make their moves after all this is unlocked? Speaking of making moves, Polymarket is making moves into the United States. They buy an onshore exchange that makes them U.S. compliant. We're going to talk about that. Shane Complin on CNBC talking all about it. And then the ETH, the big story of the week. If you were on CT, this was the news of the week, was the ETH ETF inflows god candles. The ETH treasury companies are soaking up ETH, but so are the ETFs. The ETH ETF, ETH-A, the BlackRock ETF, is now the third fastest ever ETF to hit $1 billion. We're going to go look at a chart. And spoiler, it's just a vertical line. So we're going to talk about that. More ETH treasury companies got announced this week. We're talking about that.
And lastly, an update. Roman Storm's lawyers are asking for a mistrial after, will you believe this? The government put up a witness whose stolen funds probably didn't even use Tornado Cash, David. What are they doing over there?
Witnesses that didn't use Tornado Cash? What's the point? What's the point of that?
All of this would be almost like hilarious if a man's life wasn't at stake. Yeah. So there's some big stakes here in the Roman Storm trial. We'll update you on all of that and more. I got to let you know, though, David is, he would be even higher energy given ETH price point on the week, but my man's got a cold.
I'm a little sick.
So if you're hearing that in the voice.
I'm here.
You're here and you're bullish, right?
I'm here and I'm bullish. That is correct.
Well, in your most bullish way, can you give us the Bitcoin price in the week?
Bitcoin price on the week up 0.5% on the week. We are currently clocking in at $119,000 Bitcoin. No new all-time highs on the 7 days, unfortunately.
How about ETH on the week? No all-time ETH high yet either, right?
We still got 40% until the ETH all-time high. But nonetheless, pretty happy week for ETH holders. 9.5%. We're going to round up to 10.
Yes.
Round up to 10% on the
double
week.
Digit.
So ETH up to $3,720 this week. Pretty good week.
That's been a really good run. David, I want to play this clip for you. I just enjoy Jim Cramer sometimes. Let me tell you what Jim Cramer says about Bitcoin.
Own some as a hedge against the $8 trillion. They want to own a debt. They want to own it for their kids. And you know who else feels that way? Me. I don't want that debt. My kids. I'm worried about my kids. Worried about your kids? $38 trillion.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah,
we all do. So many different ways.
Why don't you buy some Bitcoin?
I just enjoy that exchange. He's just like, it's somewhat awkward. He's just like, turns to the other anchors. He's like, you worried about your kids? You worried about your kids with all that debt? Why don't you buy some Bitcoin? Why don't you buy some ETH?
I love how that's so simple. It's just like,
do it for the kids.
Do it for the kids. Buy Ether for the kids. Do it for your kids.
This is the hidden genius of Jim Cramer. We've been talking about ultrasound money, and this guy comes out and he's just like, buy
it for the kids.
Yeah, shilling ETH for the kids. That's what we got to be doing.
Do it for the kids.
How about the ratio on the week? Are we greenish? Or?
Well, I mean, Bitcoin up 0.5% on the week. Ether up 9.5% on the week. So, you know, you add those, you do the math. I'm not a math genius, but I think that means that the ETH BTC ratio is up 9% on the week. That's kind of how that works.
All right. And you said it in the intro, but we are about above $4 trillion, right? We got an
all-time high.
We're
actually slightly below it right now. But
okay,
you know,
right now.
We're at $4 trillion. We're rounding up to $4 trillion.
That's the highest. That's the highest it's ever been. $4 trillion.
The highest it's ever been has been this week. That's correct.
And I guess our previous all-time high, what was that? When's that? Was that in December? That was December 2024. Yep. That was the previous total crypto market cap all-time high. And then before
the launch of the Trump meme coin.
Yeah, before that, we had 2021, $2.8 trillion was the top of the 2021 bull run. Uh-huh. Where do you think we go on the top here?
Six?
That is so bearish.
$6 trillion.
That is bearish. That is David Cole bearish. I'm not going to accept that answer.
I have a cold.
Do you want to ask me?
I don't think I do. Let's move on.
$10 trillion.
$10 trillion this cycle. Inside of like 18 months.
Yeah. Or however long it takes. I mean, it's 6 months.
I was on a TradFi content producer, Amit. I was on a stream last night educating about ETH because his audience was pretty large. There were like almost 2,000 people watching the stream. He was like, all my listeners are asking about ETH. And so I went on for an hour and talked about ETH. And then, he asked me the price predictions.
Don't tell me you gave him something stupid like 7K.
I said 7K.
Oh my God.
By the end of this year. I didn't say that was a top. I said it was the end of year price prediction. I said 7K.
Bagel Station, we got to help me out here. Let's get David a bit more bullish. He's forgotten what ETH can do in a bull run, in a secular bull run. And, you know, it's the cold speaking, but I feel like you could pump those numbers up, buddy.
In addition to that, I also talked about the F word, because not in the near term, but yeah. Like he asked, like, do you think Ether will ever F word Bitcoin?
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't give a time frame on that because I've been burned by that in the past. I don't want to give out that level of specificity, but I said that Ethereum is shooting for the number one spot. And it's doing it with all of the research and all the innovation and all the investment that the Ethereum Foundation has put into Ethereum. So the purpose of Ethereum is to become the number one spot. And it's got the chops to do it. And time is on Ethereum's side. Bitcoin actually does not have time because time actually decays Bitcoin. It actually like falls apart every time with quantum and the security budget. Ethereum has time on its side. And so I gave my bullish, eventually ETH takes number one spot take.
Well, further into this episode, I'm actually going to invoke the F word, but not quite yet. Okay. And we'll put that into context. First, you got to tell me about some of these coins pumping on the week.
Yeah, we got some movers of the week. Athena, the big mover of the week. This was definitely downstream of the Athena treasury company that went live. There's a little nuances on that one because I don't know if it's specifically stacking ENA, the token.
They are a little bit, right? But they are a little bit to kind of stabilize things. It's a thing, right?
It's a thing. So Athena pumped 28% in the week. Pengu, the meme coin of the Pudgy Penguins ecosystem, pumped 25%. That price action is incredible. It's a very large green candle. And then Uniswap. Not often do you see Uniswap as a mover of the week, but up 13% on the week.
Why? Did they add a fee switch?
God, I wish. What year is it? Could you imagine? why isn't the Uniswap, in the year of our Lord, 2025, why is the fee switch not on?
DAO, help us out. DAO, where's
somebody
the DAO?
Paradigm. Andreessen, just turn it on.
Yeah, it's time.
I'm still holding this goddamn bag of Uni.
Well, some good news for your altcoin bags as well. Google searches for altcoins just hit a 4-year high, according to Lark Davis. So you got that going for us in Google search. Does anyone use Google anymore, though? You know, I want to see some ChatGPT numbers. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, when Google, the altcoin term is in Google at all-time high, I'm like, that doesn't make me feel great.
Yeah, who searches for altcoins? I feel like crypto native people do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I bet you if you typed in the XRP search term for Google, it would be also very high.
I don't want to do that, dude.
I don't want to do that.
I can't look at the XRP price on the week anymore. It hurts too bad.
It's just an XRP bull market and we're just living in it.
Yeah, it's pretty much true. Some numbers I can look at on a weekly basis and I will look at this week are the ETH ETF flows. You mentioned a God candle in ETH ETF flows and you were
not that they
lying.
Have candles. If they did, it'd be God-sized.
No, I got a candle here. I got a candle in the agenda. Yeah, we can see candles. Okay, so this is Matt Hogan and the stat for you. So between July 2024 and now, ETH inflows, ETF inflows were about $4.2 billion. An entire last year, $4.2 billion. Just in this month, July 2025, we exceeded that amount.
That's so stupid.
That's a God candle.
Oh my God.
Now? Okay.
Yeah.
So let me show it to you. Well, this is kind of how it looks on the Eric Balchunas charts.
That's the vertical chart that I was talking about.
Yeah. This is ETH in green. What's interesting here is so IBIT in orange. All right. So this is Bitcoin. This is just the BlackRock ETH A numbers, which is like 80% of all inflows into Ethereum. It's got the dominant position in BlackRock as well. You can see what did a Bitcoin ETFs do. They went vertical pretty much from day one. They were just shot right up.
It went straight to one.
Like a SpaceX rocket, right? Not coming down. And what about Ethereum? Ether ETFs were slow. It's been slow over the last year. It's kind of up and down, up and down. And then suddenly this month,
It goes from like 5 billion in ETH A deposits to 10 billion in like 4 days.
It's doing what the Bitcoin chart is doing, just with like a 1 year delay. At least so far. I mean, that's pretty impressive, right? And we also got a, this is where I'm going to use that for it. We got a flippening, okay, in daily inflows. So for the last 5 days, Ethereum ETF daily inflows have exceeded Bitcoin daily inflows by like a whole lot every single day.
A whole lot. Yeah.
So that happened as well.
Yeah. So the total ETF rankings, Bitcoin, $54 billion in Bitcoin ETFs. ETH coming in at $8.7 billion in ETH in ETF deposits. And since Solana's on there, it technically has an ETF, won 105 million in Solana ETF deposits. That's a current ranking, the current horse race.
I mean, it does seem that if ETH just even catches up to its market cap size in proportion to Bitcoin, it's got some growing to do, right? That's what, at least like 15 billion or so, something like that. Yeah. And then maybe it exceeds that. So we'll have to see. Some more institutional purchasing of Ether on the week was this, David. We've got another ETH treasury company that
this website is so aesthetic.
Yeah, it's called the Ethereum machine. No, sorry, the Ether machine, because it's all about ETH the asset. And what's this? Who's behind it? How much are we talking?
Yeah, this is a good friend, Andrew Keys. We had him on the podcast so long ago, we're going to record with him tomorrow on Friday. That little episode will be out on Monday. That episode will add roughly $10 to $50 billion onto the market cap. Looking forward to that one. So it's all about Ether, the productive asset. This is also something that, Ryan, since you called me an ETH bear a second ago, this is also something I talked about on the stream last night, again, with the kind of like TradFi retail audience. Ether, the asset, has a particularly strong resonance with crypto acquisition companies in comparison to Bitcoin, simply because Bitcoin is inert. It's just an inert asset. And that's its narrative, 21 million hard cap units. That's how it works. But ETH is productive. And so when these ETH acquisition companies come online and they take on debt, and they take on debt that have to pay off like 2 to 4 to 5% in order to take on that debt, that's their debt payments. Well, they can pay that off using the yield that they get from the Ether that they purchase. And so there is this automatic repayment mechanism that Ether, the asset, specifically enables for its acquisition companies. And this is exactly the narrative that Andrew Keys is leaning into with the Ether machine. He wants to make Ether, the Ether that the Ether machine acquires, as productive as possible in order to scale out how much access to debt, access to credit that he can finance. And he's leveraging that. And so, like, literally the number one thing that they say on the website, we exist to make Ether productive. And you know, the best part about this is that there's seven different ways to make Ether productive, right? You know, and one of the biggest ones is that he's just going to take Ether and he's going to inject it into DeFi. He's going to go get yield on Aave. He's going to go stake it on Ethereum. Whatever ways in DeFi that Ether can become productive, he will use. And I think like companies like this that are doing DeFi operations to get yield on their Ether, they're just going to inject a whole bunch of TVL onto Ethereum DeFi, which is just going to give the whole ecosystem a boost. So there's a really just sexy flywheel going on here between Ether, the asset, being productive, putting it into DeFi, and then having that go onto Wall Street, having Andrew Keys go onto Wall Street and then pitch this operation that he's doing to the boomers so they can FOMO in to our bags. It's going to be great.
Yeah, he was on Wall Street too. Do you see him on CNBC? Yeah. They asked him, okay, after he gave kind of similar pitch that you just gave, basically they said, so Andrew, do you own any Bitcoin? This was his response.
So you're an Ethereum guy. Do you own Bitcoin?
I'm not. I do not own Bitcoin.
None.
I'd rather have an iPhone than a landline.
Ooh.
Wow. Did you see what Andrew said after that?
No, I heard him say, he went, ooh.
Yeah, so right after that, he goes,
burn, sick burn.
Yeah, I think that's what the kids call a sick burn.
Oh, you said that? Yeah. Oh my God, that's so funny. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, so it's Andrew Keys there, just talking about, you know, the apps and the economy that you could build on top of this productive asset called ETH. So a few other stats. This was to be the largest ETH treasury to date.
Was to be?
Well, I got an update for you. Okay, so it was to be 400,000 ETH. Okay, that would be top of the charts. Last I saw the ETH reserve, last we were looking at it last week, Lubin and Tom Lee, they were having around 300,000 ETH in terms of supply. This would be 400,000. From Andrew Keys.
Coming in, jumping in at the number one spot. But
that
you
was
said
the plan. That was the plan. Yeah, everybody's got a plan until Tom Lee enters and buys some more ETH. Okay, well, first of all, I gotta tell you what the ticker is. And it's a nice, clean ticker. It's ETHM, ETHM. All right, so it's not a former Bitcoin mining thing. It's, you know, not a sports thing. It's just straight ETHM, which I sort of like.
I think that matters, actually.
No, really?
Like, versus SharpLink Gaming. Yeah, granted, Joseph Lubin has done a great job, because whenever
strategic bet on ETH, yeah.
When I think SBET, I think strategic bet on ETH, yeah. But then, like, Tom Lee's, like, BitMine. I think the branding actually matters here.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? You know what does matter, though, is when you buy in size, and that's what Tom Lee did. So, breaking, as of today, this is the time of recording, BitMine Immersion, BMNR, added another 266,000 ETH to its balance sheet, bringing its total, you ready for this? New number one slot, 566,000 Ether on the balance sheet.
That's number one?
That's number one by a healthy margin here. Okay, that's 2 billion. And if I were to run some math for you, remember we got into a little bit of the math last week, right? Tom Lee said he wants to buy 5% of all ETH. We're about 1 month in to the Tom Lee purchase engine. He's 10% of the way there. He's got another 90% of the way to go. If he's going to hit that 5%. Right now, Michael Saylor owns 2.9% of Bitcoin. So Tom Lee is planning to almost 2x, two Saylors worth of ETH in proportion to Bitcoin, in proportion to the amount that MicroStrategy owns. So that's a lot. And he's not going to be able to always buy it at these prices, is he? I mean, if he doesn't...
You got to get it below the all-time high.
You got to do that.
It's a race.
I mean, that's pretty... You were talking about, last time, oh, it's got to be the race to a billion ether. Or sorry, a million ether, right?
A million ether.
We're 50% of the way there on that race, too. We're just like a month or two in.
You know what? New race.
Yeah?
10 million ether. New race, 10 million ether. BitMine is 5% of the way there. Keep going, Tom Lee. You're doing great.
I think they'll get diminishing returns. It gets harder and harder to buy with fiat as the price goes up, right? I mean,
10,
and you're heady 7K levels. Oh my God.
Wake me up at 10 million ether. The BitMine Immersion Technology is up 10%. That was announced today, right? The acquisition that we talked about?
Just this morning, on Thursday for
on Thursday, Western, which is today, yeah. 9.5% BitMine technology. No, yes. That's what the stock price jumped today.
Yeah. And you know what? When Tom Lee is schmoozing with people like Kathy Lee, who's also purchasing BitMine, and this guy, you recognize this guy?
Yeah, that's Jensen from NVIDIA. Dude, Tom Lee's such a funny looking guy, man.
That's part of the appeal, man. Just the hair is working for him. You know, he's just...
Yeah, something's doing it for me.
Yeah, you like this?
I'm into it.
All right, you ready to revise your price predictions now?
Okay, so I am a holder of SBET, Ryan. I don't know if you are.
Yes.
I'm a holder of SBET. And SBET is down 40% on the week after it peaked out at $40. And I know that Joseph Lubin is just dumping on me because he's going to issue shares to raise funds to go buy more ETH. And it's a mixed feeling that I have of just okay, so I'm holding the stock and I'm adding to the premium, and Joseph Lubin's going to sell this, and he's able to sell it because people like me are buying, but he's dumping on me. But it's okay because he's going to go buy more ether. And then when he announces it, it's going to go back up. It's just a weird.
I got the perfect solution for you. You ready for this? Okay. Make sure you just still own some ETH, man. He's dumping on you in order to buy your other bets.
My other bets.
Cannot fail. Actually, comes the question. These are some questions from the Bankless Nation that our Discord, our private Discord for Bankless Citizens, they've been asking about the Treasury. I want to raise some of these questions. Because, when somebody starts saying things like cannot fail, that was satire, by the way, okay? Don't clip me, clip lords. At some point, this is going to go in a direction where it's overpumped. And that was the first question that came out of Bankless Discord. Is the hype around ETH Treasury plays indicative of a bubble? What do you think, David?
A bubble seems like such a binary thing. So is it a bubble or not? It's bubble-ish. It's definitely frothy. It's definitely we the euthanasia roller coaster. We have one good thing, and then crypto has a pattern of taking one thing to its logical conclusion, which is incredibly distorted. I definitely see that's what's happening. Litecoin treasury acquisition companies, come on, let's be
come on
here.
Yeah, come on. You're not a buyer.
Yeah. And so like this is a message that I sent inside of the our Bankless team Discord, just kind of like about my thoughts on it, just to like kind of give everyone a heads up of where I am with this meta, this bubbling meta. Like at the end of the day, yes, this is a true unlock. Like treasury vehicles are a net new thing, both for TradFi and crypto. There's a real primitive here that is valuable that Michael Saylor has pioneered and now we are trying to copy. And so I don't want to discount that. When we look at some of the deals of the ETH treasury companies or the Bitcoin treasury companies, they are pulling forward demand. And so we are borrowing from the future to have demand today. So it's kind of a shot in the arm. It's a little bit of a shot in the arm.
And in the process, reflexively creating net new demand that you wouldn't otherwise have.
Definitely that. And that is both, you know, there's a double-edged sword. So we're reflexively, you know, causing marketing to happen. You know, the price is the best marketing. So we're buying it. We're bringing in net new buyers via that shot in the arm. And, you know, maybe that shot in the arm is especially what Ether needed to like get it out of its like REV meta from the ETH concerners and into the ETH as a global reserve asset meta that the ETH treasury companies are like taking it. So maybe we're elevating Ether into a better market.
Needed to happen.
It needed to happen.
We're not even at all time high yet, right?
Yeah. And so like that's kind of how I'm thinking about this. It's a one time shot in the arm that we don't know how like, how large that shot in the arm is. Maybe it's very large. Like maybe like this like race for crypto reserve assets is very large, and maybe it keeps on going. This is something that, here's my cautionary tale, is that there is opportunity for grift in these treasury companies. Doesn't matter if it's a Bitcoin treasury company, an ETH treasury company, a Litecoin treasury company. But I think as you go down the market cap, the likelihood of it being pretty grifty goes up, or the surface area for grift goes up. And I'm going to harken back to the days of the yield companies, Celsius, BlockFi, Gemini Earn, which no one really wants to be lumped in with Celsius. But Celsius was cheating. It was a Ponzi scheme that was cheating, and it was truly grifty. And Celsius was so bad that they pulled in their competitors to kind of get into the mud with them. And so BlockFi really, in order to be competitive, had to do some things it didn't really want to do. And that got Zach Prince in trouble with BlockFi. But like, were they really bad to begin with? Not really. And then there's Gemini Earn, who was involved with just in the yield arena, but they didn't lose any customer funds at the end of the day. And so these are the same three businesses. One was a full-out scam. One was above board, but kind of got sucked into the mud. And then one was totally fine, but it was just in the same environment. And it's really about the leadership, in my opinion. It's going to be the leadership of these respective ETH treasury companies or crypto treasury companies that determines like whether this thing is the final outcome of each individual company. That's kind of my analysis on these things.
Yeah, my take is, I see that analogy for sure in terms of things that go out of hand, have gotten out of hand. But just to be clear, this is nothing like Celsius. You know what I mean? There are assets there. You know, what you really have to worry about is the MNAV premium on all of these treasuries. And there could come a time where that actually dips below one. And that would cause some unwind. And you don't know who's making bets and leverage and things in the background. Like, we didn't know that 3 Hours Capital was doing all this shit in the background on top of the GBTC, like NAV plays, right? And so you don't know until you get into like bearish territory, and that could unwind in a hurry and cause some chaos. I guess my take around bubble territory is I'm like yellow, all right? It's not green. It's not red yet.
It's not red. Yeah.
It's not even orange. It's yellow. Moving to orange. What I do think that could happen is an afterboom into Ether, though. You were talking about into DeFi, rather. You were talking about the productive capital uses, all right? This is Hugh Karp, Nexus Mutual. ETH treasury companies reaching out as they plan to deploy into ETH staking and DeFi and want to do it safely. Pretty bullish for DeFi generally.
Yeah,
I think that's something to get ahead of, but I think all of that will happen. Like, we'll see DeFi do a run before this whole thing is over. So I still feel like we've quote-unquote got some time. But you can see things are moving that direction a little bit more. How in the world did BitMine and Tom Lee just stack another, 250,000 worth of ETH? Another $1 billion, a cool $1 billion, without moving the market? You said we're up 9% on the week. I mean, shouldn't we be up like 29% on the week with these kind of purchases?
Uh-huh.
Which sort of makes you wonder like what the source of this actually is. You know, is this OTC going in the background? This is some speculation here. Did Justin Sun sell his ETH stack to BitMine OTC, right? I don't know. Justin Sun did some unwinding this week. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I guess...
I could totally believe it.
it is interesting, right? There's some stuff going on behind the scenes, OTC sales. There are some net sellers of ETH, or else you wouldn't have, you know, Tom Lee being able to purchase $1 billion worth of ETH without this massively affecting prices. It's only affected prices a little bit. Yeah. So that's also interesting as well.
Yeah. Well, eliminating sell pressure is the same thing as adding buy pressure. Yep. SBET absorbed however much the Ethereum Foundation just sold to them. So yeah, we didn't get SBET buying ETH because they bought it from the Ethereum Foundation, who would have otherwise sold it. So in the grand scheme of things, it actually nets out equivalently. Like Justin Sun, if Justin Sun unwound his ETH and gave it to Tom Lee, Justin Sun was eventually going to sell that ETH for one reason or another. And now he's not, because now it's in a ETH treasury acquisition company that his goal is to hoard as much ETH as possible. So I feel better about Tom Lee having Justin Sun's ETH than Justin Sun having Justin Sun's ETH.
Hypothetically, all that's rumor. I don't even, it's probably not the case, but substitute Justin Sun for somebody, some other OTC seller, and you get kind of a similar outcome. But buyer beware on these treasury entities. Some more news that maybe the end is getting a little closer. This is Solana bull Joe McCann. You just launched a liquid fund. Oh, sorry. He just launched a Solana treasury. $1.5 billion is what he plans to raise. So notable hedge fund manager Joe McCann.
Notable. Definitely notable this week.
Certainly notable. Sure.
Certainly notable.
David, we got a lot more to talk about, including the Trump party, the crypto party at the White House as genius became law. Trump also met with Paolo, the founder of Tether. I think it's got to be the first time. That was a fun encounter.
That's right.
Also, Polymarket, now available in the U.S. We'll talk about how that is. And a little bit later, you're going to tell us how Ethereum is shipping bigger blocks without a hard fork. Mm-hmm. How do we make that happen? But before we get to all of that, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our friends over at Uniswap. Is the best place to do DeFi. They've got a mobile wallet. They've got a browser wallet. Of course, they have an exchange. Go check them out.
Ethereum's layer 2 universe is exploding with choices. But if you're looking for the best place to park and move your tokens, make your next stop Unichain. First, liquidity. Unichain hosts the most liquid Uniswap V4 deployment on any layer 2, giving you deeper pools for flagship pairs like ETH-USDC. More liquidity means better prices, less slippage, and smoother swaps. Exactly what traders crave. The numbers back it up. Unichain leads all layer 2s in total value locked for Uniswap V4. And it's not just deep. It's fast and fully transparent, purpose-built to be the home base for DeFi and cross-chain liquidity. When it comes to costs, Unichain is a no-brainer. Transaction fees come in about 95% cheaper than Ethereum mainnet, slashing the price of creating or accessing liquidity. Want to stay in the loop on Unichain? Visit unichain.org or follow at Unichain on X for all the updates. Ever wonder how industry-leading companies like Coinbase, MetaMask, and Phantom Wallet build products that always stay ahead of market shifts and new token listings? It's because they all use the CoinGecko API, the most reliable and comprehensive crypto data API, backed by a rock-solid 99.9% uptime SLA. Builders, analysts, and businesses rely on CoinGecko for real-time data on 9 million cryptocurrencies across 1,500 exchanges and 200 different networks. It goes beyond crypto prices to access liquidity, OHLCV, DEX data, metadata, NFT floor prices, and more, enabling your team to build and scale powerful products like wallets, oracles, exchanges, AI agents, and DeFi applications without limitations. Onboarding is easy with clear documentation and enterprise-grade support that answers you faster than Finality, 24/7 around the clock. Supercharge your product and build with CoinGecko API today. Head to gcko.io/bankless10 and enter code bankless10 for 10% off any plan. CoinGecko API, crypto's most trusted and reliable data source. Imagine a world where traditional finance meets the power of blockchain seamlessly. That's what Mantle is pioneering with Blockchain for Banking, a revolutionary new category at the intersection of TradFi and Web3. At the heart is UR, the world's first money app built fully on-chain. It gives you a Swiss IBAN account, blending fiat currencies like the euro, the Swiss franc, the United States dollar, or the renminbi with crypto, all in one place. Enjoy real-world usability and blockchain's trust and programmability. Transactions post directly to the blockchain, compatible with TradFi rails, and packed with integrated DeFi futures. UR transforms Mantle Network into the ultimate platform for on-chain financial services, unifying payments, trading, and assets like the MI4, the METH protocol, and Function's FBTC. Backed by developer grants, ecosystem incentives, and top distribution through the UR app, reward stations, and Bybit launch pool. For MNT holders, every economic activity in UR drives value back to you, embodying the entire stack and future growth of this super app ecosystem. Follow Mantle on X at Mantle_official for the latest updates on blockchain for banking. That's x.com/Mantle_official.
Last Friday, the Genius Bill was signed into law. This is bunch of guys, a bunch of members of Congress, I should say, watching.
And a few Bankless podcast guests.
Yeah, I see.
Tom Emmer. Yeah.
Bill Hagerty.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, there's Bill. Good old Bill. There's something funny about just eight dudes surrounding Trump, looking over his shoulder,
signing a piece of paper
while he signs a bill. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, that was it. So Genius bill signed into law, of course. So last Thursday, the House approved Genius. It was a 308 to 122 vote. 308 said yes. Not even close, man.
That is a wow, blowout.
And after it was signed, they had a party at the White House. They called it a ceremony with a whole bunch of the stablecoin folks. Actually, maybe I'll play some clips. This is sort of a clip reaction with some of the names who attended there.
My name is Michael Miebach. I'm the CEO at MasterCard, and we just witnessed the signing of the Genius Bill.
This is really the beginning of a financial revolution here in America. With the passing of this, we've got crypto stablecoins now that can be built right here in America to make every payment fast, cheap, and more global.
It enables us to upgrade the financial system, make it fairer, more accessible.
The president was able to achieve one of the most important changes in the legal framework in the United States to allow the creation and the safely usage of stable coins.
This is going to mean fantastic benefits for individuals and businesses around. And looking forward to the great results for crypto and for the U.S.
This is a great day for crypto. This is a great day for the U.S. dollar. And it's a great day for America.
This is foundational legislation, foundational regulation that is going to unlock the power of the internet in rebuilding the financial system.
Not only that, but it positions the U.S.
Vlad from Robin Hood
as the global leader in this new digital assets industry, which I think is incredibly important.
So all that
they just posted a Glaze video out of the White House main account.
Yeah, that was the out of the White House Twitter account.
Wow.
Okay, that's pretty incredible. Trump, I get the sense that this is the first time maybe Donald Trump met Paulo from Tether, but he called him out by name as part of the ceremony. Here he is.
Paulo Ardino of Tether.
Paulo,
thank you, Paulo.
How far has Tether come on his journey, eh?
Cool.
Yeah, look at Donald Trump shaking hands with Paulo here, and you get the sense that, wow, you know, I wonder if Paulo like just whispered to him, you know, do you know how many treasuries I own? Tether has more treasuries than the majority of G20 countries.
Dude, do you think Paulo is like, Trump, I'm your daddy?
Not quite at that level.
Not very many people have leverage over Trump because like, he's just like a big figure, but Paulo's got leverage.
It's kind of crazy that an individual of a corporate interest has that amount of treasuries.
Hi, I own $160 billion of treasuries. You better be nice.
This is Scott Bessent talking about the Genius Bill. Of course, the Treasury Secretary. Blockchain technologies will power the next generation of payments, and the U.S. dollar is coming on chain. Thanks to President Trump's leadership. We got the Genius Act will help cement the U.S. as the dollar as the global reserve currency for generations to come. That's really the message. There's a win-win for the U.S. here and also for crypto. We get the dollar as the reserve currency for generations to come. You know, my family members actually brought this up to me. They're like, oh, the Genius Bill signed. Like, what do you think? You know, so I think this has gotten some mainstream attention. Not a lot. You don't get a lot of bills.
Okay, so you have three kids and a wife. Which family member?
Oh, no. Extended family members. Okay. It was like actually my father-in-law, and he mentioned it. He never talks to me about crypto. And he's like, oh, Genius Bill. They passed. Tell me about that. So
family members are asking you about the Genius Bill? They're not asking you about like XRP or Cardano?
Oh, no. Other family members are doing that. That's like, the text messages you get like after 10 p.m.
Okay. All right.
But what I'm saying is it's pretty notable. It's national news. When Congress passes a bill with bipartisan support, that's national news. And they did it on crypto.
There's also worth talking about what Tether's plans are now that this bill has been signed. And so when we had Paulo on the podcast, we asked him a little bit about this. And he wasn't, I'm not going to call him cagey, but he's being patient with the Tether plans post the Genius Bill. I don't think he's in any rush. And the reason why he's not in any rush is because Tether has 3 years to comply with the Genius Bill. And there's two different ways to comply, as I understand it, Ryan. Maybe you can fact check me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's being a foreign issuer, which Tether is going to be. So they're going to comply as a foreign issuer.
With an existing USDT, right?
The current USDT, as we all know it and use it, is going to register as a foreign issuer. And then Tether is going to spin up a US-centric coin, a new token that's going to comply with the onshore compliance. And why he's going to spin up a second coin rather than just like make Tether onshore, I'm not sure if we totally know one of the reasons.
I think he wants to keep his options open, quite honestly. You know,
yeah.
You have the domestic one. It might not make sense for USDT to fully register, actually,
yeah.
Which would mean it would be effectively banned from US exchanges. But he might be fine with that. That actually might be the...
I mean, like, is Tether on Coinbase anyways?
I mean, a little bit, right? But like not in size. And it's almost, you kind of wonder if it's actually a bug. For USDT to be like formally registered, recognized by the United States. Maybe the holders of Tether don't fully want that. Maybe that's more of a bug than a feature for them. Yeah. So he's just playing his options here.
Yeah. But it does mean that in order to be a foreign issuer, he's going to have to move away from Bitcoin, gold, and corporate bonds backing Tether. Mm-hmm. And this is the existing Tether. And so he has to move all the reserves towards T-bills and cash-like instruments.
Yeah, he might not want to do that either, right?
But he already bought the Bitcoin at like $20,000 Bitcoin. Like, he's already bought cheap gold at like 40% cheaper than current prices. So he's already in a huge profit. Yeah. So I don't think he's too bummed about that.
You know, one of the other things I like about this is, you know, people outside of crypto, they say things like, oh, crypto has no use cases. I mean, look at it. It's just... And they ignore completely store value, Bitcoin number go up, because that's just Ponzi tech. So they ignore that and they're like, it has no use cases. Stablecoins are an incredible use case.
Yeah.
This is easily a 10 to 20x better system than, like, I was trying to do a wire last week from one bank to another.
I'm
one
so
of my
sorry.
Banks to another. My God, it took days. At one point, wire. Yeah, it took days. I don't know how many people I talked to on the phone to do this.
Uh-huh.
Literally, at one point, the wire got lost.
Absurd.
It got lost. They had to
the notion of getting a wire loss is an insanity.
I really don't understand how wires work, but I know when I move USDC or stablecoin from one address to another, I could see the settlement on chain, and it happens instantly, 24 hours a day. It's easy. We don't need a whole back office, multiple phone calls to all these people to actually move funds around. This is a 10x improvement already, and that's just moving funds domestically. You're trying to get funds to somewhere else in the world. It's like impossible.
Yeah.
Like, the banking system kind of sucks.
Really,
I mean, this
sucks.
Is the reason we started this podcast, but it's actually true. It does suck. And stablecoins are a 10x improvement at least on that.
Whenever I hire a guide, guides are always is a pain in the butt to send money to.
Because
they are mountain guide. Yeah, they're to climb. So it's always in a foreign country. It's usually in Europe or Argentina or something. Sending the money is just a huge pain in the ass. And I don't really want to be like the crypto guy before I meet them, but then I go hang out with them for like 3 days in a row, and you have to talk to them about your life because you're spending 3 days with them. So he asked me what I do, and then I talk about crypto. And so I just teach about them crypto because they're stuck with me for 3 days. but then I always say, okay, I'm going to tip you with crypto. You always tip your guide.
Yeah.
But I get them to download Coinbase or Kraken or whatever continent they're in. And then I get them to send me their UST, their Tether address. And then I send them Tether, and they're like, whoa. That was instant. And like, I didn't even have to give you any information and like all that stuff. This
it's
is
wild,
great.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think I pill them every single time about at least accepting crypto as an option for payments.
Stablecoins are great for payments. They sure are. Polymarket, David, is now available, going to be soon available to US users for the very first time.
Sick.
Yeah.
So I don't have to use a VPN.
This is Shane Copeland. Basically saying, this paves the way for us to welcome American traders again. I've waited a long time to say this. Polymarket is coming home. David, how is he doing this? How is Polymarket coming home?
So they just acquired an exchange. So they acquired QCEX, which had just received its CFTC license just weeks before the deal. And so this other company gets the CFTC license, and then Polymarket buys it. And the deal was probably in the works prior to that. And so they basically bought the registration. And so now that using that exchange, they now have the compliance that they need to service US customers. When this goes live, uncertain. I'm assuming it's not happening like immediately.
No, it's not.
TM?
You got to join a wait list in order to do this. So there's a place you can join in the US on a wait list, and they'll notify you when it's ready. But yeah, this is a CFTC approved. Actually, Shane went on CNBC. and explain this to
ETH people on CNBC. We've just like dominated CNBC conversations over the last like 2 weeks.
Let's hear.
You've been operating. We talk about Polymarket as if everybody can use it, but the truth is that most folks couldn't because you had to be out. You had to be in Europe
for trading. I think the way you guys talk about Polymarket, it's kind of like become the Bloomberg terminal for reality almost. And it's awesome. I'm humbled that every time I tune a Squawk Box, you're like, well, Polymarket. And, you know, I was watching Eric Adams' episode, and the first thing he said is like, well, the Polymarket for this. And, and I was just like, you know, I'm from New York. I went to high school right here. And the mayor talking about our site is just incredible. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a ton of latent demand for people who want to participate in the markets, not just look at it. So for us, you know, where we sit, it was like a must have.
And so what happens now?
So obviously, I think people were pretty surprised. It was like a big acquisition. And the simple way to put it is it's kind of the perfect asset. So it's an exchange and a clearinghouse. And, you know, that lets us go and serve brokerages and FCMs, as well as retail and institutions, which is really important. They all know and love Polymarket. When I get to meet these people, they say, oh, my God, Polymarket's amazing, but I wish we could trade on Polymarket. And, you know, ask and you shall receive, right? So
how much does this compete?
It's pretty great. I mean, his whole story arc.
That's bullish.
Yeah, Shane's story arc. Like a year ago, he was being investigated by the FBI. I mean, they busted into his house. Now, a year later, he's on CNBC announcing an acquisition, coming home to the United States. I feel like this type of thing also, if I were to put my money long term, maybe there's a Polymarket for this. Is Polymarket going to go public? Doing this kind of CNBC roadshow tour is part of the way you kind of build an audience for that. I don't know what's in Shane's mind. We haven't talked to him about this, but that could actually be a possibility for Polymarket to go public. I mean, this is an entrepreneur with some pretty big ambitions, I would say.
Yeah, I'm sure Shane has some PTSD from getting raided. And as a founder, I think like being a public company on the public stock market is like raid insurance. Like the next Dem administration that comes in, you can't raid the founder of a public company. Like, that's ridiculous.
You're exactly right. Or somebody that's on CNBC, mainstream media all the time. In fact, actually, Andrew asked him that question and about him getting raided. This is what he said.
Did you freak out that morning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you got to make lemonade out of lemons. So that day was very crazy, but it was also an inflection,
wow,
and a milestone.
Did you freak out that day? Yeah.
He paused. He's like, yo, it's okay to say that you freaked out, bro.
It's traumatic. I'm sure that was traumatic.
Yeah.
Side note, David, do you remember this? He wasn't the only guy that got raided. The only crypto person that got raided. Actually, Jesse Powell, the founder of Kraken, got FBI raided around the same time, maybe a little earlier, actually. And he was also vindicated. So the FBI has dropped all charges against Jesse Powell. This is sort of a weird thing. It wasn't related to Jesse's activities at Kraken or crypto. It was allegations centering around a nonprofit that he was part of. He was part of the board, and there were allegations of hacking and cyber stalking that Jesse did. And so they raided his house, basically. And they took dozens of electronic devices. For me, this was actually in 2023, but, you know, similar timing-ish. They stole laptops, cell phones, all of these things. And now all charges were dropped against Jesse as well.
You know, I don't really care what excuse the FBI says that they have. When they raided Jesse from Kraken and they raided Polymarket, these anti-democratic, Shane was just neutral. Polymarket just reported on the truth, which I think was offensive to the Democrats. I don't believe what excuse. I don't care about the nonprofit that they said that they raided about. Like, I'm calling shenanigans.
It felt like that. You know, we don't know all the facts and circumstances. Certainly in Shane's case, it was that. In Jesse's case, it felt like that. Brian Armstrong even said about Jesse's case, we still need more progress, but obvious moves like this, which is vindicating Jesse, are a good start cleaning up past lawfare. Man, if that's what that was, lawfare against crypto, which it seems like it was, I'm very glad to call that era over. Although we're not done yet. Coming up next, we got to talk about the prosecution of Roman Storm. And the DOJ brought a witness to the stand who apparently had nothing to do with Tornado Cash at all. We'll talk about that. Also, Ethereum blocks getting bigger and Zora getting a little pump on the week. David, you want to compare Zora and Pump, don't you? The actual Pump. Maybe there's some competition brewing. We'll get to all that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including Frax, the decentralized central bank. It's like Circle, Athena, Maker. They all had a baby. Go check them out.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and Rolex. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to Frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fractal's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Binance is the world's number one crypto exchange. Over 275 million users already trust their world-class security. Binance makes starting crypto as simple as it should be, whether it's learning about crypto on Binance Academy or browsing hundreds of assets and viewing your newly created portfolio in a clear, easy-to-track dashboard. Binance helps you go at your own pace. For hardcore traders, Binance Pro opens up industry-leading services for trading professionals with fully bespoke trading products, along with a suite of white-glove services for VIP and institutional clients. Need support? 24/7 customer service is on hand whenever you need it. And with some of the lowest fees and deepest liquidity in the market, it's no surprise why over 275 million users trust Binance for everything crypto. Download Binance today and get started in minutes. Binance is not available in certain countries, including the United States. Check its terms for more information.
The Ethereum mainnet just processed its largest block ever, 45 million gas units. That's up from where it was just 12 months ago at 30 million. So Ethereum blocks are 50% larger than where they were just like 6 to 9 months ago.
How did that happen?
I'm so glad you asked. Ethereum block sizes can actually get voted up or down by Ethereum validators. So this is an in-protocol feature that Ethereum can scale or contract its chain based on a voting of Ethereum validators. And so more Ethereum validators have been voting, saying, hey, we're ready for more capacity. Let's give us some more capacity. And when sufficient, you know, critical mass of validators signal for higher gas sizes, then Ethereum, the protocol, increases the gas size. And so it trends upwards. It doesn't like violently move in any direction. It just kind of slowly trends. But we just had our first 45 million gas block on the Ethereum layer one. And people are targeting for more. They're asking for 60 million. In the near to medium term, I bet we hit 60 million by the end of the year.
That's like what, a 25% jump in terms of when you're saying block sizes, you're basically talking about transactions per second, right? The amount of transactions.
Total throughput.
So a 25% jump just
30 to 45% is a 55.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
I mean, it was 36 initially, but like it's been 30 million gas for a long time. And then it jumped to 36 recently, and then it continued going to 45. It's not holding 45, but we're getting 45 million blocks at a time.
This is part of the Donkrod proposal, basically, to kind of 3x TPS on Ethereum layer one every year for the next 5 years. Right, this is part of that process.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that there has been a meaningful shift in priorities for Ethereum protocol upgrades. This is POTUS tweeting out. He's an Ethereum developer. He says, two forks ago, we did not have cheap layer twos. Two forks from now, Ethereum will have perfect parallelization of execution. That's called a block access list, right? Order of magnitude more gas limit. That's what we're talking about right now. Orders of magnitude more blobs. That's pure DAS. And then better censorship resistance. That's fossil. There are some very big things that are getting shipped to Ethereum that really round out the protocol.
I know.
In a very big way. And so we're getting parallelization. The Ethereum layer one is continuing to scale. And especially with parallelization, I think like it's going to be able to fit quite a lot of activity, both meme coin traders and TradFi, you know, treasury acquisition operations, all on the layer one. And that makes me pretty excited.
Yeah, for sure. I'm speaking of networks that are not sitting still. Solana is talking about a large tech upgrade that's incoming. It's called the BAM protocol. And this is, Jito introduced this. So Jito, you know, to me, Jito, if you're coming from the Ethereum world, it's a bit like Lido and Lido plus Flashbots plus Geth. So it's almost like they do client work, they do MEV protection type work, and they're also a staking protocol. That's where, you know, like most people know them, like Lido. And they are proposing something called BAM, which is a structure that really trying to fix or take a crack at fixing the MEV problem on Solana. And I very much like you, you know, transactions per second, that's definitely, you know, you need to increase that in order to scale block space, like decentralized transactions per second. That's very important. The other thing that's important actually is minimizing MEV on chain, because that's a scale limiter as well. Institutions, users, they're not going to deploy on chain if they're getting basically raked over the coals.
Things that are illegal in TradFi, like most MEV activities are like illegal to happen in TradFi.
Yeah, and it's legal or illegal. It's just like, it's bad practice. You know, I just spent, you know, you cost me a dollar in slippage for this, you know, $10 trade. That sucks.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, some people are, Mert has said that this is the biggest change in Solana history, private encrypted mempool, app-specific sequencing, and verifiable ordering so institutions can build without worrying about MEV. I didn't get into all of the details of this, but as I understand, this is very much inspired by a Flashbots type of design on Ethereum. And this is Jito kind of adopting some of these practices and trying to implement it into a future Solana hard fork. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Specifically the BuilderNet from Flashbots, where they do a lot of expressive rules-based order sequencing, transaction sequencing inside of a TEE. And then you get all of these pretty good properties. BAM stands for Block Assembly Marketplace. It's basically like Flashbots, BuilderNet, like I said. I would say like this feature specifically is like one of the, in my opinion, going after Solana's weakest link is like the MEV and order transaction ordering supply chain. And so I think this is a very important upgrade for Solana.
I agree. David, speaking of Solana, so I ran across this. There's actually a civil case that was recently filed against some of the people we were talking about. Jito, also Solana, the Solana Foundation, and also Pump. In fact, the whole thing centers around Pump. And this is, we've seen a lot of court cases before, including civil cases. This is the first time I've seen a civil case of this type, okay? Which is, they are alleging that these entities, so Pump on the app layer, Solana, and Jito, together inspired to create an unlicensed on-chain casino. So they're invoking RICO laws. RICO, the R in RICO, that stands for racketeering. Basically, racketeering laws. If you're not familiar with that term either, it means it's when you combine wire fraud and illegal gambling and unlicensed money transmission all together. That's called racketeering. Well, it's like casino license type rules. You know, stuff the mob was doing before. That's racketeering. And they're alleging that these entities conspired to racketeer. They created conditions for an online casino, essentially a meme coin casino, that turned Solana into an unlicensed algorithmic slot machine for meme coins, costing the plaintiffs here billions of dollars. You know, and so the way they got to billions is all the fees from Pump, plus, interestingly enough, the MEV fees in Jito, plus the price appreciation of Sol the token. They got to like, you know, 3 billion or so.
They're lumping all of these things together?
They're lumping it all together, which is interesting. They're saying all of these entities together are creating basically an on-chain casino. And they pulled up some quotes, you know? So, of course, you got the Pump Fund founder. Here's a tweet. Greatest casino. It's all part of the experience. It's a privilege. The Pump Fund CEO on August 8th. There is a tweet in the complaint here. You also have people like Mert that were quoted here. The Solana fee model is stochastic on purpose to naturally simulate a casino environment. So on the one hand, this looks like it could be a frivolous lawsuit, right? It's just like, oh, here's some money. You know, here's meme coin casino. We're going to go after the money and see if we can do it. And I think that's probably the base case of what this is. On the other hand, I get worried that this could set a precedent, not for a civil case, but for a DOJ type case, you know, a federal case at some point in time, if the climate in the US changes to something like it was back in 2023, 2024. So it's going to be an interesting case to watch for sure.
Yeah. Okay. When I hear class action lawsuits in crypto, my mind immediately goes to the Pool Together frivolous lawsuit where somebody just like put money into Pool Together, lost it, and then sued them for being like an unregistered lottery.
Yeah.
Which Pool Together is not a lottery.
And that one turned out to be political, right?
Turned out that person worked for Elizabeth Warren. And it was very frivolous and opportunistic lawyers. So when I see a class action lawsuit, especially in crypto, I'm like, okay, all right, who's trying again? Yeah, I've seen this before. Like class action lawsuits can become a big payday for lawyers. And then they're advocating, you know, they're representing millions of people who lost billions of dollars. And then when it's all said and done, and say the lawyers win the lawsuit, the average individual gets like a $7 check and the lawyers walk away with like $100 million.
For sure.
I don't know what's going on here.
Could be that.
It could be that. And I think it should be considered that until proven otherwise.
It's just worrisome. I mean, this kind of lawsuit could be brought against Ethereum, let's say, right? You know, it could be brought against layer twos, you know, all sorts of things. If, you know, this goes forward, I think, I don't know, could pave the way for some other nasty stuff. Okay. David, Coinbase offering perp futures to U.S. citizens for first. Your Bitcoin or your Ether, you can get them on perps and Coinbase. That's new. You ever trade any perps, David?
I am an expert perp trader.
Are you?
I call you
Mr. Perp?
Yeah, that's right. Everyone knows I'm the world's greatest perp trader. Everyone, they tune into the podcast. They hear about the perp trades.
We finally got them in the U.S. because all of this has to be CFTC regulated, and now it is on Coinbase.
Now we get to watch perp volumes on Coinbase compete with Hyperliquid perp volumes. And then also when Robinhood rolls it out, Robinhood too, that's going to be interesting to watch.
There was more news from Coinbase. PNC Bank and Coinbase announced a partnership. What's going on with this partnership?
I recently did an episode, Coin versus Hood. It was a very, very illuminating episode. And we, on the two guests, really drilled down the strategy that Coinbase is doing, where they are trying to basically be the crypto backend for TradFi institutions who don't want to do it themselves. And so PNC Bank looks like it's one of those. But you could imagine like Fidelity or anyone who wants to allow their customers to trade crypto, they kind of just whitelist Coinbase and plug into Coinbase in the backend. Looks like that's what's happening here. And so Coinbase is being the crypto backend for PNC Bank. Is that what's going on?
That's what's going on. I feel like every bank is going to, well, first of all, post Genius Act, they're like, okay, you know, stablecoins, crypto is fine. It's fully regulated, game on. So now they have to have a strategy. Are they going to build out all of the crypto functionality? Do they have the teams? These are banks, man. They do not have the teams in place to deploy the custodial technology, the exchange technology of the Coinbase. So what are they going to do? They're going to open it for their customers, but they're going to use entities, crypto native entities like Coinbase on the back end. That's great. And the relationship works the other way too, which is Coinbase gets a good banking partner on their side too. So it gives them a bit more being debanked insurance, I suppose, future. If you have your,
I wonder how much PTSD from the last 4 years is like indicative. Like Shane wants to take Polymarket public rather than issue a token because he wants insurance. Brian Armstrong wants as many banking partners as possible because he doesn't want to be debanked. I wonder how much
work. Never again, right? Yeah, it's got to be a never again type attitude. Uh-huh. David, we should update folks on the Roman Storm trial. So it is the second week, the first full week, and it's really been the prosecution so far. Were you following some of the highlights from this?
I was reading it loosely. I think you pay attention to it more than I was, though.
Yeah, I did. So the big news on the week, the big thing that kind of blew up, which was very interesting to me, is that we almost got a mistrial. Okay, this is at least what Roman Storm's defense attorneys were calling for. They're saying, all right, this has gone too far. We need a mistrial.
On what grounds?
Yeah, on the grounds. So you remember last week we talked a little bit about some of the witnesses that the prosecution was will bring to the stand. Well, one was a very sad story of a Katie Lynn, it's in air quotes, it's pseudonymous, I imagine, who made five total deposits totaling roughly $250,000 to a sketchy platform called NTU Capital. This is called a pig butchering scheme. Okay, have you heard of that pig butchering scheme?
I'm assuming we're not literally talking about pig butchering.
No, we're not. Okay, it's a common scam scheme. It's called pig butchering, and the idea is you fatten up the pig and then you slaughter them. Okay, so you know the pig in this case is the victim, and it's a pretty traditional scam, and it usually begins in a Telegram chat. In this case, it was a WhatsApp chat, somebody pings you and they're like, hey, how are you? We just ran across one another. And suddenly, David, they've got this incredible investment opportunity. They kind of get to know you. You're back and forth. They build trust that way. And eventually the victim sends them funds into this fake opportunity that seems real to them at the time. And then, of course, they steal all of their money. And at the end, they usually try to manipulate them into investing more before that. And then they end up cutting the victim off and oftentimes just making fun of them after the fact. Like, I stole all your money. See you later, right? It's kind of sad.
What does this have to do with Tornado Cash?
Exactly. Okay, so
Let me guess. The exploiter, the criminal, used Tornado Cash.
Okay, that's what they were claiming. So they had a sad story from Katie Lynn, a legitimately sad story. We've heard this so many times. This is not just crypto. This is just like everyday type scam. And what the prosecution was saying is, and then they used some of the funds, some of the proceeds that the hackers and the scammers threw Tornado Cash. And when Katie Lynn emailed the generic Tornado Cash, you know, email, bounce back, generic thing, she didn't get a reply. All right, so that was the case. But what they were trying to do is they were trying to tug on the heartstrings of the jurors, right? Look at all the bad things happen. Roman Storm, he enabled all of this, all of these scams, all of these victims, all of these, you know, pig butchering schemes. It's all happening. Okay. But there's only one problem with that, David. They didn't even use Tornado Cash in this instance.
Wait, what? What did they use? What was the purpose then if they didn't? What's the association?
The DOJ apparently thought that maybe Tornado Cash was being used, but when it turns out, we've got the best super sleuths in the business in crypto Twitter, okay?
You've got Taylor Monahan pulled up. Oh, that's
Zach great. XBT, people like Taylor Monahan, they went through and they traced it, okay? And according to this very case, the $250,000, there's no evidence that any of those funds went to Tornado Cash. There's evidence that some of these funds went to exchanges. I won't name them, but there's a few exchanges on the list. They're not on the stand. None of it went to Tornado Cat. Okay.
So you're telling me the prosecution brought on this sob story.
Yes.
Got the jury to sob as hard as they could. And then they were like, and here's Roman Storm.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. What? Yeah, exactly. So they basically were blaming Roman Storm for like somebody getting scammed in crypto, right? And you're painting him as the perpetrator here.
Why didn't they go after the scammer?
Great question. Also, there's other parties involved. I mean, you could blame the internet. You could blame the Ethereum blockchain.
I blame the internet.
You blame the internet. The internet made all this possible. Who can we get the CEO of the internet and hold them responsible for this? I mean, that's basically what's going on in this case. Now, the defense demanded a mistrial, basically. And then the prosecution, last minute, they parachuted in a witness, an expert witness, an IRS agent that said, no, actually, you know, I do see part of this 9.78 ETH of this $250,000 went to Tornado Cash is what he tried to say. Yeah. And then under the cross-examination, the expert witness actually admitted that this doesn't prove the hacker actually did the Tornado Cash. And, you know, experts on crypto Twitter are like, they're doing it wrong. We can see it on chain. We're tracing it in the correct way. None of it went to Tornado Cash. And even the expert witness says he may have been wrong, but this prevented a mistrial. So that's some of the shenanigans going on right now. I think Jake Chervinsky had a great take. An update from Roman Storm's trial. He said, DOJ had years to prepare for this. And so far, their case is basically crypto is bad. Their first witness had literally nothing to do with Roman Storm or Tornado Cash. DOJ is trying to imprison a DeFi developer, and this is the best they can do.
Well, I'm not in the jury. And so I have a lot more context and like education about crypto than
they're seeing likely, none of this
likely
by the way,
the,
right?
The jury does.
Exactly.
But I hope that the jury understands enough that they should be fucking annoyed that they are there.
You wasted our time.
Like, why are you wasting our time?
David,
like,
even
prove
the
that
witness
he's guilty or get out of here.
Even the witness, okay? She had to like relive all of her trauma, went through this, right? The DOJ told her, and Tornado Cash wasn't even part of that.
Right.
I mean, she's like, why is she there?
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not Roman Storm's like defense counsel, but like, I'm kind of like, they can ask for a mistrial, but like, if it's a mistrial, can't the prosecution just go back and try again? But if they lose the case, then they can't go back and try again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm a fan of this teetering on the edge between being a mistrial and not a mistrial, because if it's so close to being a mistrial, then it's likely that he's going to be just like excused.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it depends what the jury thinks about this. They still have some ammo on the prosecution side. They're trying to say that Roman had control over the front end. He should have taken it down. They're calling expert witnesses from the government who are saying, no, this is how Tornado Cash should have worked to prevent any money laundering, that sort of thing. So we'll have to see. Meanwhile, Roman Storm is getting debanked like all the time. Gusto just canceled his like payroll stuff, right? Like that's happening in the background. But next up, next week, the defense presents the case, and then closing arguments could be mid next week, and a final verdict could be on the table on Friday. So big week next week.
8 days from the time of recording.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be trying to talk to some of the reporters who've been covering this fantastically well at The Rage. Shout out The Rage. They have been covering the Tornado Cash case very well. There's a link in the show notes, and we'll hopefully be talking to them next. So, David, Zora versus Pump. What do you want to get into here?
There's a pretty strong juxtaposition going on right now between Pump Fun and Zora. And Pump Fun has had ton of attention ever since the Pump token launch. So maybe to recap some of the details, there was a very large ICO for the Pump token at $4 billion valuation, sold out within minutes, and then something like a $700 million raise, both from private VCs in the private sale, and then also on the public sale to end individuals. $700 million, sold out very quickly. The Pump launched at like $5 billion, so an immediate 25% return, got up to $6 billion. Things looking pretty good. And since then, there's just been a lack of communication out of the Pump team. And also since then, there's a new token launchpad called Bonk. And Bonk is taking 60 to 70% of token launchpad volumes. And so Pump is actually, as of July, the month of July, Pump is not the dominant token launchpad volume, based on volume on Solana. The Pump founder, Alon, went on to a live stream with Thread Guy, and it was a very watched live stream. I think there was something like 5,000 or 6,000 concurrent live viewers, which kind of gives you an indication about how many people are watching this. People were asked, like waiting for clarity, like, okay, what happens next? Because there was a Pump airdrop that was promised. We're looking for the Pump live streaming feature. Overall, there's a lot of the community that were looking for indication as like what happens next. A lot of people invested into Pump at $4 billion. There was just a lot of missing communication, I think people felt, from the Pump team about what happens next. During the Pump live stream, right as Alon said that there was going to be an airdrop, but not in the immediate future. There's going to be an airdrop, but not in the immediate future, is when the Pump token goes from $4 billion in value to $3 billion in value.
Oh, wow.
And so there's some frustration on the Pump side of things. And overall, I'll blame that very high expectations that a $4 billion valuation leads to.
Yeah.
And so like at $4 billion, where like people gave $700 million the money to, that's the bar that's set. Now let's go over to the flip side of things. The Zora app mints are up only, and there's no second best in the Ethereum landscape. I bet you it doesn't actually hold a candle to Solana launchpads. So like Solana launchpads are just launching much more assets in general. But you got me onto the Zora app once again for like the third time today.
Week. You were saying last week, you were just saying, no, Zora's not for me. you're saying that.
If you download the Zora app, you can just imagine normies having a ton of fun. And it's exactly like Frentech. So when you go on to Zora, you can launch your token. And then, I bought some Ryan bought some of me. I'm at a humble $112,000 market cap. And then I launched a picture. So I posted a picture and it's got like a $1,000 market cap. And there's like 36 buyers of it. I've earned $13 from it. It's just fun. Go ahead.
It's interesting that you're comparing them though, because I see Zora as completely different versus Pump.
I see them as the same, dude.
Why?
So Alon is all about creators. Like tokenizing creators using tokens and running with attention.
But it's not wrapped in a social network, right? It's just, or I guess maybe that's what they're doing. They're saying they're trying to disrupt Twitch.
That's right. And so they're going after streaming, but Zora is going after social media.
Yeah.
But they're both trying to reward creators by having tokens and capturing attention. Now, the difference here is the Zora token market cap earlier this week. So Zora started the week coming in at a market cap of just about $38 million. Now, that's not fully diluted. Fully diluted was maybe something about $400 million. So $400 million. Mm-hmm. It has pumped in the last 7 days, 300%. 300%. So it went from a market cap of $34 million up to $175 million. Yeah. And I think it's just because the expectations are totally different. Like, Pump has a huge expectations at $4 billion. Now is clocking in below $3 billion. And everyone's kind of written off Zora. All the trench people have like kind of written off Zora. Yeah. But the Zora app is so polished. And it's so good. And it does the same thing. It does the same thing as Pump.
I've never been a heavy Pump user, but I did engage in the friend tech experiment. And it reminds me
Have you ever bought a token on Pump Fund?
No, I've never done.
No, you've not.
Yeah, not at all. Not even been tempted. I just don't really care. But like, I don't know. Zora's kind of fun. Now, I will tell you this. I have no idea what to like post on Zora. I just haven't figured that out. Like, I know how to tweet on Twitter. I know what Instagram is like. The post on Zora, there's almost like, for me, there's like the pressure of like, oh, it's got to be good because people spend money on this thing.
Yeah.
So what do you post?
I think it's iconic memes. Yeah. I like truly iconic stuff, like viral moments. Like if we posted a clip of Sam Bankman-Fried getting rattled under the focus of Eric Voorhees,
yeah,
that would have gone super viral.
But it has to be at the time, probably, right?
Like, it has. You have to capture the clip best. Yes. It's highly related to attention, in my opinion. And yeah, I think you're onto something where like the content form factor that's resonant with Instagram or the content form factor that's resonant with TikTok or Twitter, every medium is its own modality.
Yeah.
I think that's a correct segment. And so like what goes viral on Pump or Zora is going to have its own kind of form factor. And like Zora native creators are going to figure that out. And they're going to be the leading creators on Zora.
Oh, we'll see what it does. Wait till they get to, it's all crypto people there still, right? You need some big celebrity type creators to kind of like get this thing off the ground, but maybe that's coming next. Uh-huh. We will end it there. Guys, of course, none of this has been financial advice. It never is. You know, crypto is risky. So are meme coins, Pump token, Zora, treasuries, all the things.
I've lost $5,000 on Zora this week.
There it is in the disclaimers. But we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.